hearings for people to comment. I'll probably put an update for people who will be wanting to follow along with me. Otherwise, I'll have updates as I cover it within the next couple of weeks.
Sounds good. That is our Bemidji and Northwest Minnesota reporter, Larissa Donovan. Check out her stories at KAXC.org and sign up for the podcast of Up North Report. Go to KAXC.org or search the podcast platform you use. Thank you so much, Larissa.
Thank you.
This is the Thursday morning show. It is People Powered KAXE.
You are listening to 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji. We are Northern Community Radio, telling the stories of the people and land of Northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. Operating translator K210DR in Brainerd at 89.9. Listen at KAXE.org. or on your smart speaker. We need people like you to support this local media. Text the word donate to 218-326-1234. Thank you.
We've got some texts coming in on our text line. We can't tell you enough how much we appreciate people responding to what's happening on the morning show. It just keeps us going. Steve from St. Paul, when you go to the High Falls, I was talking about being there in Grand Portage, the Canucks start peddling their phone service. I did get something on my phone.
I know.
Always happens to me where my phone tries to switch.
They try and grab you right when you get up there. Yeah. Well, we also heard from Joni when you were talking about hearing owls.
I met Joni and Steve at the festival. They were both there. It was so fun. But anyway.
Wow. Okay. And they're both texting in. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Said barred owls have been so loud. Love falling asleep listening to them. Ah,
I know.
That sounds dreamy. We'd be sleeping better if there was an owl hooting outside.
And our friend Betty from Nevis says about coffee. She said, I can't live without it. I hear you, sister. This might be a free ad if you mention it, but we were introduced to Roma Kawa Coffee Roasters in Bagley. Delicious coffee. They have a club subscription program and many different coffees. Life without coffee is like a day without sunshine. One could say that about KEXC as well. Betty also says, if I were rich, I'd give you lots of money. You do great work, and you are always the way I start my day. Betty, whatever you can give, whatever you can do, we love hearing from you. She is a regular texter to us, and we really appreciate it. She keeps us on top of what's happening in the Nevis area as well.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about this, that I've ran into some people who are a little nervous about texting in, and I don't know what...
Yeah.
The worry is, I guess, but if you're out there and you ever have some thoughts, nothing crazy happens. And it really is. It's really impactful for us and can really help us out, but nothing like wild is going to happen to you for sharing your thoughts.
Malik and I are just two people sitting here.
And I won't roast you.
Sometimes we don't know if anyone's listening, and you have more knowledge on some of the things that we are blabbing on about.
Exactly.
And we need that from you. We understand, you know, that kind of hesitancy, but you can also say not for air if you just want to tell us something and report on something, or if you want to say don't say my name or something like that, you can certainly do that.
Yes.
I'd love to have a little experiment between 8 and 9 o'clock to get as many people texting in, even if it's high from wherever, to see if there are actually people out there listening, to see if people who've never texted and had, you know, worried about it somehow. Like, let's get over that today.
I agree. Yeah.
Okay.
It's just a say hi. Where are you listening from?
Yep.
What are you up to? Is the sun shining? Probably. What birds you're seeing? Whatever it might be. A song you hear. Your thoughts on coffee.
Happy questions birthday to Kari. And you just had a... I missed your birthday, I think, right?
My birthday was last week, Tuesday.
Well, happy belated to you.
September birthdays are wild. Yeah. Happy birthday to Kari. We had some folks texting in. sending in someone yesterday had a lot in common with Kari. There was also their birthday.
Yeah.
They were from South Dakota.
Wow.
And they liked similar music. I'm forgetting what the other one was, but,
right.
So it's a lot of fun.
All right. We already heard from Steve in, Grand Rapids saying hi.
That's nailed it. Need. That's all we need. Mm-hmm. Just nailed it.
The number to text is 218-326-1234. Coming up, we're going to be talking more local news in this hour with MinnPost and the Star Tribune, and we want to continue to get your texts coming in. 218-326-1234. Let's talk weather. Sunny today, highs 73 to 80, breezy south winds 5 to 15, gusting up to 20, clear tonight with lows 44 to 49. Sunny tomorrow, temperatures in the low to mid 70s. And looking ahead, it's looking lovely on Saturday as well, upper 60s to low 70s.
I know. I'll be looking forward to Tuesday's far away, but when I checked my weather last, it was just sunny and kind of around the low 70s as far as my weather, whatever weather I was looking at went out. It was just the same over and over and over again. So I'll be interested to check in with Tornado Bob next Tuesday and see what is happening. Fall's got to arrive at some point, but just blue skies, low 70s, not too breezy. It's just like perfect day after perfect day.
It is.
Don't want to jinx it though.
I know. So we heard from, as we were talking to our early bird fishing guide earlier this morning, he said the water temperature is warming up again. And so this time of year, he's usually talking about that fish are following the fall patterns, but now they're going back to summer patterns. And it's a little confusing.
The fish are confused?
So, yeah, I guess so.
Heck, I'm confused too. Yeah. We just heard from Rural Bovee. A listener said, making deer cages to keep the rodents off my trees this morning.
Hey.
That is perfect. That's we want to know what folks are doing, and that is very in this area.
Yeah,
I wonder
kidding.
What rodents are you battling, but good luck keeping those trees safe.
Yeah. Dang rodents. Anyway.
Dang rodents. I kind of like rodents.
You do?
Well, not when they're eating your trees. No, not those ones, but in general, like
we almost lost
a little varmint kind of creature. It's kind of cute.
I can't, not to me. No? I can't remember what varmint it was, but they
varmint's a weird
decimated.
Word.
I know. I feel Southern. They say it and you take the N out of it too, maybe like varmint or something. But anyway,
vomit.
Some little buddy was decimated the one of our apple trees, you know, and we thought for sure it was gone. It's this beautiful, huge apple tree that held our Honeycrisp apples. And that was about 3 years ago.
Okay.
It's doing okay. I mean, it looks a little crazy, but it's producing even more. I mean, its stuff is falling and whatever, but
this critter pruned the tree for you or something?
We thought it was a goner. And no, I'm not saying it was a good thing, but you know, you just never, never know. I think we're getting some more texts.
Yeah, we are. We've heard from Daryl and Tamarack, who says, black, white, and gray coming into the goose decoys. I don't actually know what that means, but thank you for chiming in, Daryl.
And Bill,
I need a hunter to explain that one to me.
Well, that's the fall colors they love, that Daryl loves, black, white, and gray coming into the goose decoys. So he's hunting geese, right? So those are the colors he likes because the geese are coming
in. Got it. Wow. Thank you. That's obvious. I didn't pull it together.
We're on the spot here.
Yeah, we also had Bill from Big Lake chiming in. Says, the rare chance I get to listen on a Thursday, and likes his coffee dark, dark with heavy cream. Wonderful. Thanks for tuning in, Bill.
Yeah. We also have heard this morning from Jan. She says, about coffee, why does 6 cups of coffee in maker translate into about 3 real cups to drink? Jan, I hear you on this. I do not understand that.
Okay. I think that...
It soaks into the filter?
No, I don't... Okay, so how do coffee... Do they all come from Italy or something? I don't know. My theory is that it always seems like it's like an espresso cup worth.
Yeah.
Or maybe you're not... Okay, alternate theory. You know how you wouldn't fill a wine glass up to the brim?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe someone would, but like when you get a glass of wine, it's maybe a third.
Right.
It's like a standard pour or something like that.
A quarter.
Maybe coffee companies think that you're supposed to put like a third, half cup of... But whereas, you know, me and you, like I'm coming into the studio with coffee sloshing out the top of my coffee mug.
Yeah.
I don't want to have to go back to the coffee maker.
We are serious. Yeah.
So maybe that's why the number is off. But that's a really good question, and I've thought about that often.
We also heard from, did you mention Mike from the...
No, we missed Mike.
Northeast Landing. It's a good morning from the Deer Lake Public Access.
And sweet. Heading out in the lake today, Mike?
We're going to start counting how many since we asked for this to happen. We also heard from... someone saying, good morning from cloudy Brooklyn, New York.
Yeah, from Marianne in Brooklyn.
Nice.
Wow. There we go. So a little bit different weather in Brooklyn. My brother's also, he's not listening right now, but he is also in cloudy Brooklyn, New York at this moment.
Nice.
Yeah.
Coming up, we're going to be learning more about rural grocery stores, a new comprehensive article in MinnPost by their new Greater Minnesota reporter, Brian Arla. But first, we're going to take a listen to our album of the week, Buddy Guy.
Yeah.
John Latimer's new favorite thing.
I know. I heard he was really jamming out to it. His 34th album. Can you believe that? I guess he's been around for a long time. He put it on his 89th birthday, Heidi. Still going strong.
Love it.
Like the car he wrote, he's got a lot to say.
Yeah.
And he's still got a lot to play, too. Still tearing it up on the guitar. Let's take a listen to Buddy Guy.
I bet Buddy has giant cups of coffee, not a little, a little one, you know?
Do not know what you're about to
Sloshing
say
Sloshing around.
Yeah.
And just like us. Here we go. We're taking a listen to Trick Bag, and then we're talking grocery stores in rural places.
You walked out the door. You told me, baby, was going to the drugstore. But in my mind, I knew you would lie. The drugstore closed at 8:45. I saw you kissing Willie across the fence. I heard you telling Willie I ain't got no sense. The way you've been acting is such a drag. You're gonna put me in a trick bag. When I come home, you start an argument just to keep me asking where my food done went. Walk in the front door, I heard the back door slam. Peek out my window, somebody's taking it on the lamp. Saw you kissing Willie across the fence. I heard you tell Willie I ain't got no sense. The way you've been acting is such a drag. You done put me in a trick bag. Mad, got on the telephone, call your mom and dad. They came running down with bats in their hand. Don't you hear them no more, you understand? I saw you kissing Willie across the fence. I heard you tell Willie I ain't got no sense. The way you've been acting is such a drag. You done me in a trick bag. Son-in-law. Saw you kissing Willie across the fence. I heard you tell Willie I ain't got no sense. The way you've been acting is such a drag. You done put me in a trick bag.
That is our album of the week by Buddy Guy, celebrating 89 years producing music. Maybe not all of those 89 years that he's producing music, but we are glad to have his new album as our album of the week.
I know. Can you imagine if your father-in-law just roasted you like that in a blues song, in a song? You'd be down bad if that was the case.
Yes, you would.
This is the Thursday morning show here on KAXC. That's Heidi Holton. I'm Malachi Coons. Thank you for tuning in.
Today, we've been checking in with rural journalists, including the KEXC newsroom. Our next story is about the importance of grocery stores food insecurity in rural places and changes from the federal government on reporting of hunger. Grocery stores, as we all know, can be really a hub of communities, but times have changed. Malachi, you grew up in a pretty small town in Wisconsin. Do you remember the grocery stores there as something special?
Yep, absolutely. I, you know, was the youngest. I was at home with my mom. She was not working when I was little. And, you know, I just remember going to the grocery store all the time, you know, knowing the names of the bagger. There's this guy named Chad. He still works there. He was always so thrilled to see me and kind of knew him throughout my life. This guy. I eventually ended up working there in high school. But in my town, we had a co-op. We had the grocery store, and then later on we had Walmart where you could also buy groceries. And I think right around the time it was an institution, but by the time I went left to college, a larger chain of grocery stores had gobbled up the small local one. And then I think now they've all closed. Now there's an Aldi and a Walmart. So there, you know, there's more options than rural places, but you know, even in that, my lifetime went from small one, larger local chain, gobbled it up. That one then closed.
Yeah.
So now there's Walmart, Aldi, and a co-op.
It changes communities. We're excited now to have with us for the first time from MinnPost, Brian Arala. And he has done this intensive, in-depth article in MinnPost about, it's called Many Minnesotans Already Live Miles from Their Nearest Grocery Store. What happens if it closes? Brian, welcome to KEXE.
Hi, Heidi. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Okay, so this story you've done is part of the Rural News Network initiative from the Institute for Nonprofit News. Let's start with the personal. Did you, you know, you're hearing Malachi talk about his small town remembrances of grocery stores. Who'd you meet? How'd you find these grocery stores right now?
Well, yeah, him talking about growing up in a small town. I grew up in Chisholm, Minnesota, and my first job was actually at a grocery store at Jubilee Foods, which is still around. So this reporting this story brought back some memories from those times.
Ours was also called Jubilee. Sorry, I had to throw that in there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Small world. yeah, but for this story, which is called, or this project, which is called Sowing Resilience, we looked at food insecurity. And so my angle for it was looking at rural grocery stores, just knowing the role that they play in communities. And I was looking for communities that are small towns that are far away from the next closest option. And two places in northwest Minnesota popped up, and then one in northeast Minnesota. So I made the loop, long road trip to visit these communities, hear from the grocers, and found out they had really interesting stories and really central roles in their small towns.
Did you still see that there was a lot of community in these small grocery stores? Like that was sort of, not necessarily you're hanging out, but you know people and you kind of share the news of the community when you're shopping.
Absolutely. And you used the word hub, and it's a hub in more than one way, not just food access, but the bulletin board, the people coming in and seeing what's new and sharing the latest update. So it was very apparent right away when I was in these that people who walk through the door are familiar faces, maybe even distant family members of the people. And so there's a very tight-knit aspect to it where it's more than just a grocery store and a place to get food. It's also a meeting place and a place to stay connected with the rest of your community.
Yeah. What are some of the challenges that these places that they are facing that is kind of causing this for these ones that still have a small one, but what are the long-term challenges that they are facing?
Yeah, rising costs always, inflation, costly equipment. So if a refrigeration unit goes down, that's not an easy fix always. It's multiple thousands of dollars to do that. And you can't always predict, even though it's equipment failures tend to happen eventually. You don't know when it'll happen. Or there are already tight margins, so that's a tough one. And then growing competition and consolidation, which you touched on a bit ago, Malachi. And then upcoming cuts to nutrition assistance programs won't help either, because that just can further cut into those narrow profit margins.
So this isn't just a story about like local businesses in small towns. This is also about access to food. Can you talk about that aspect of it?
Yeah, so these stores, which are in Grigla, Greenbush, and cook. All of them are examples where if that store isn't around, people are going to be traveling longer distances to get food, and there's quality of life and cost impacts related to that. So it wouldn't be that uncommon for to find stores in Minnesota where 50 miles round trip is realistic to get to the next closest place, maybe even more to get to a thing that's most comparable to what they had. You may have a closer option at another quicker convenience store, dollar store, those kind of things, but it won't have the all the options, the produce, the meat, all that stuff that you can get. So that's really the difference, is you lose that personal touch of local stores, but also the long drive you would face, and that changes, especially in Minnesota. We know winters get really, really brutal in some parts of the state in particular, and you don't want to venture out when you're short on groceries or have that essential item you need when there's a bad blizzard going and you got to go 30 miles.
And you can't just hop a bus to go 30 miles, you know, so you have to have that access to transportation on your own to be able to do that. Otherwise, you're facing food that, you know, maybe from a convenience store where you're not getting much fresh food that could really impact your health as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It ties into those other aspects of rural access gaps with transportation, and we see similar issues with healthcare, where if you have to travel further for that, it changes your quality of life. So it really ties into those other issues as well.
I was talking to Heidi earlier this morning that, I have heard about food insecurity and heard about food deserts earlier in my life. It was often in the context of like neighborhoods within a big city where they have, less access to cars. So it was really interesting to see this through the rural perspective. Yeah, you talked about growing up in Chisholm. What really inspired you to dig into food insecurity in these more remote rural places?
Yeah, this came to mind pretty quickly when the Rural News Network put out a call for pitches from nonprofit newsrooms around the country. And there are eight others that are producing stories that are also really, really good to check out and have different angles to this topic. But what brought it to mind for me was previous reporting when I worked at the Mankato Free Press for 9 years before coming to MinnPost to cover Greater Minnesota. And we covered a Mankato, but a little bit of the wider region. And there was a store that started out, I believe, as a hardware store in a very small town south of Mankato. And they transitioned to also add grocery options. And it was because the town did not have anything like that. So people were having to go out of town to 20 miles plus to the next place. And it was a big deal. That community had not had a grocery option locally for a very long time. And so that came to mind, that I remembered reporting on that previously. And it got me thinking, where else are there places like this that have these sort of hubs in their radius that still do these things and are really big for their community? So past reporting really, really came in handy, and it didn't take too long to find good examples of stores that meet these criteria and would be interesting to highlight.
We're talking this morning with MinnPost reporter Brian Arla, and we're learning more about the story, the in-depth story that he's done on rural grocery stores, food insecurity. Now, it seems like some of the issues that we are facing are also tied, of course, to the federal government and what's happening with the federal government. You talked about food stamps or SNAP benefits and also kind of linking hunger and how the federal government is sort of changing things. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you found out there?
Yeah, so many, as I'm going around the state and looking into issues in Greater Minnesota, a recurrent theme I would say is wondering what at the local level is being impacted by decisions at the federal level, how it's kind of being felt on the ground. And one of those is these Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program changes, which are likely to make it a little bit more difficult to receive those benefits. And many grocery stores get a chunk of their revenue from those, so there's going to be an impact if fewer people can use that. And then also what tied directly into this story this week was the change to data reporting by the federal government on food insecurity. So the Associated Press, as part of this story, compiled data on food insecurity for every county that all of our newsrooms were working on. So we could understand and put in context, here's the percentage of people who are experiencing food insecurity in each of these counties. Now that data will no longer be available after October, apparently. And so that's going to make it a lot more challenging to understand what's going on in real time on the ground. And that's happening at the same time as we may start to get closer and closer to experiencing what these SNAP cuts will do and the impact they'll have.
So, Brian, you mentioned, you know, growing up in Chisholm and the grocery store there and then these grocery stores you visited. So you probably came into this story kind of thinking you might know what was going on. Did anything surprise you along the way?
What surprised me was growing up in Chisholm. Chisholm is about 4,000 to 5,000 people. So it's a small town, but you realize by going to some of these other communities, how big Chisholm is compared to them. So it became very clear as I was getting into these communities that these can be quite remote. And so there's a tight knitness there to the community. And you get a sense of, yeah, this is how far someone would have to go. And this is how big of a deal having a store locally versus not is. Grigla is a very small community, and they would go quite a ways to the next closest place. In Chisholm, it's still a big deal to have a local grocery store. You wouldn't have to go quite as far, but it would make an impact. But that was quite clear. And also the welcoming of these folks in these communities was really, really clear early on. They seemed really, really happy that someone was visiting their community and wanting to hear about their story and highlighting their local store that they love so much.
Yeah, that is wonderful. Before we let you go, Brian, we were talking all morning with rural reporters from our very own Larissa Donovan, we chatted with earlier, a reporter here at KXC. We're going to be talking with Aaron Brown, who reports for the Star Trib on different Iron Range issues. Just to you as a journalist, what's the importance of having reporters and stories about rural places in Minnesota?
Well, I come from a local news background. I worked at the Hibbing Daily Tribune first coming out of college for a couple of years, and then Mankato Free Press for nine. So coming from local news background, I'm always trying to champion and tout the work of local journalists, because I know there's such great work going on all around the state, and it's sometimes unsung work, but they're the folks who are going to the city council meetings, and like in Black Duck, I heard earlier, for that issue, and school board meetings and all these things that are affecting people at a local level. There's just, those are irreplaceable to me. So I'm a big champion of local news, and think that the best part of my job is visiting communities around the state and talking to people and trying to bring those stories to the MinPost audience, so that no matter where you are, you understand your neighbor in Minnesota better.
MinPost reporter Brian Arella. Read the full story at minpost.com. Brian, it was great to talk to you. Hope to do it again soon.
Yeah, thanks, Brian.
Thanks very much.
We'd love to have you send us your stories. You could tell us about a small town independent grocery store that's in your town or one that's gone away. What does it mean to you? You can text us at 218-326-1234.
Coming up in just a moment, we will hear the Up North report from the KXC News team. We also are going to be chatting with Aaron Brown around 8:40, so stay tuned for that. We receive support from Coldwell Banker Northwoods Realty, helping guide your real estate journey in northern Minnesota since 1947. From buying or selling to land or lakeshore, Coldwell Banker Northwoods Realty. More at coldwellbankernorthwoods.com.
Thanks also to Bonner Eye Clinic, locations in Grand Rapids and Hibbing, with cataract surgery, LASIK, and general eye exams. BonnerEyeClinic.com. Let us help you see clearly.
Also from L&M Fleet Supply, carrying a variety of products for your next outdoor adventure with 13 locations across the Northland. More at lmsupply.com.
We've got more local news coming up for you. The Up North Report is next. It's going to be sunny today with highs 73 to 80, breezy south winds 5 to 15, gusting up to 20, clear tonight with lows 44 to 49, and tomorrow Friday sunny with temperatures in the low to mid 70s.
We've also had more folks chiming in as we have a call out to hear from as many folks as we can this hour. kind of inspired by hearing from different people here and there that texting in is almost a little nerve-wracking or a little bit a little bit strange. We want to pull the curtain away. It's there's really it's just fun, basically, and it's just nice to hear from everyone in our community and learn about things and know what's going on, know what you're up to. We had Casey and Warba just chiming in as well. Good to hear from you, Casey. You know, we can have your name if you give it to us, but you don't have to. That's absolutely not required. We also heard from Mark, again, checking in, is inspecting for aquatic invasive species. Thank you for doing that work, Mark. What else, Heidi?
Jan is, this is a question I had too, Jan, and we just ran out of time, but Jan is wondering about this story we were talking about in MinnPost about the effect of Dollar Generals on local grocery stores. I've heard it can really stress them.
That's a good question.
Yeah, we know, you know, if you drive, if you live or drive through rural places, we see Dollar Generals popping up all over the place. And it's just an interesting thing. I would love to know more about that, about what that does. Is it a good thing for the economy? I had sort of a negative view of them. But when I was spending a lot of time as my mother-in-law, as she aged, there was a Dollar General in her small town. And for her, she wasn't able to drive to Grand Rapids anymore. And she loved going to Walmart where she could get everything. And so for her, it was like a mini Walmart. And she loved it. She absolutely loved it. The people there knew her name. They, if I went without her, they were asking me how she was. But I know that the economic model there is very different, you know, so it can be a confusing issue. So I'm glad you brought that up, Jan, and I'm going to send that comment on to the reporter from MinnPost because I bet it's on his radar as well.
Brian. Yeah, I always wish we'd have more time to check in on that. Yeah, on a similar topic, even thinking about a little more food specific, as Aldi becomes more and more common everywhere, I wonder how that, how that works. I was surprised when one showed up in my hometown. And that's 4,000 people-ish. I wonder what their cutoff for coming into areas is as well. We also had some chiming in from Vincent again, who said he was in Italy for 2 weeks. Tiny elf-sized coffee.
And Steve also commenting on the coffee. Says, oftentimes espresso is ground finer, which means more surface area to soak and stronger coffee.
Yes.
Physics. And coffee.
Yeah.
Would you call it physics? I don't know.
I believe that that is, that feels right.
Okay.
You know when you make like a little, a Bialetti espresso machine? Not espresso, but you know those little, those things that you put on your,
kind of
like the water percolates up through the ground coffee.
Sure.
Those are so much fun. Even if the coffee like didn't taste good, you just feel like a scientist when you're making it.
You know, we have one at home and I've never used it. I need to do that.
Oh, you love it.
Yeah.
It's going to be better than my... It's not as intense as an espresso.
Sure.
Because the pressure that the water is going through is lower than an espresso machine. So it doesn't pick up quite as much flavor. But obviously, it picks up more than like a standard drip coffee. So it's kind of right in the middle there. And I see why the Italians love those things. They're awesome.
If you want to weigh in on coffee or what you're hearing this morning, we're hoping that we help you be less nervous about being engaged with KEXE, and you can text in and you can let us know, don't say my name or any of that. Malachi just got some feedback from people.
Yeah.
That
well, just broadly, you know, I've heard it from many different folks
that, you know, they're nervous to call in. We cannot tell you how much it adds to our broadcast and just personally in Malachi hearing from folks.
So. I overshare things all the time, you know, what could go wrong?
You can text us at 218-326-1234.
Support for KEXE also comes from Dale's Auto Body, serving the auto body needs of Grand Rapids and surrounding communities since 1984. Performing auto body and collision repair as well as auto glass replacement. Dedicated to getting you back on the road after an accident. More information at dalesautobodyinc.com.
And thanks to Harmony Food Co-op, Bemidji's full-service downtown grocery store, offering people a variety of local, organic, fair trade, and conventional items. Open daily from 8 to 8, harmonyfoods.coop, also on Facebook.
And we receive support from North Homes Children and Family Services, providing compassionate mental health services to children and families at home, school, and in the community. More info at northhomes.org.
Getting some more texts coming in here. Casey in Warba says, I like the AeroPress coffee maker, so I'm not committed to any more than one cup at a time.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Oh, Lori. We just heard from Lori as well. I start my day with you every morning. Your voice grounds me, Heidi. Ah, Lori, thank you.
Is that a coffee reference?
Oh, it's, yeah. She's good.
She's good like that.
Putting it together. Julie Crab texted in. Do you see that?
No, so many texts too fast. I can't even keep up. She says, I love texting with y'all. It makes me feel like we're having a conversation and that I'm included. Thank you. Also, there's an Aldi coming to Hibbing. I love Aldi. Huh. There we go. Thanks for chiming in.
Good to hear from you this morning. Up North Report is next. Then we're checking in with Star Tribune reporter Aaron Brown.
For KAXE News, I'm Megan Buffington with the Up North Report. An Iowa man was rescued from the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness on Tuesday after cutting his leg with an axe. The St. Louis County Sheriff's Office received a report of an SOS notification around 6:30 p.m. According to a news release, Christopher Banfield of Davenport, Iowa, hurt his leg, and a tourniquet and bandaging were being used to stop the bleeding. The St. Louis County Rescue Squad coordinated the rescue, and Banfield was eventually transported to the Cook Hospital. A man found guilty of a 1998 Aiken County murder will be released from prison over a year after the state's conviction review unit recommended his exoneration. The Minnesota Board of Pardons voted Wednesday to commute the sentence of Brian Pippett. Pippett and four other Native American men were accused of burglarizing Evelyn Malin's convenience store for beer and cigarettes and killing the 84-year-old woman. In June 2024, the review unit from the Attorney General's office announced it had found insurmountable reasonable doubt about Pippett's conviction. According to the review, unreliable, incentivized witnesses connected him to the murder and later recanted. The prosecutor's theory of the case was implausible. Key evidence exonerating Pippett was overlooked, and two alternative suspects with an apparent motive, means, and opportunity were never fully investigated. Pippett's counsel also admitted to not being able to competently represent him, and the county prosecutor was later disbarred. The Board of Pardons voted to commute Pippett's sentence based on good behavior and the length of time served compared to his co-defendants. Former DFL Senator Nicole Mitchell of Woodbury was sentenced to 6 months in jail Tuesday. A Becker County jury found her guilty of first-degree burglary and possession of burglary tools in July. Mitchell broke into her stepmother's Detroit Lakes home in April 2024. Defendants are typically incarcerated where the conviction occurred, but the Minnesota Reformer reports 7th Judicial District Chief Judge Michael Fritz ordered Mitchell to serve her sentence in the Ramsey County Jail. Mitchell will do her time in her home county so she can participate in work release, meaning she works outside the jail during the day and sleeps there at night. She was also sentenced to 5 years of probation. Mitchell is appealing her conviction. A federal lawsuit alleging Hubbard County law enforcement used excessive force and violated the constitutional rights of a Line 3 protester has been reinstated. Chelsea Perkins has the details.
In an opinion filed last week, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the 8th District reversed an earlier dismissal of the case by a lower court. Protester Matthew Locke sued Hubbard County Sheriff Corey Aukus and Chief Deputy Scott Parks, along with the county, over their actions at the August 2021 protest of Enbridge's oil pipeline. The two used pain compliance techniques to try to get Locke to remove himself from a device attached to an excavator at a construction site. Aukus and Parks applied pressure to pressure points and nerves on Locke's head and face before an extraction team arrived to remove him. He now suffers from facial paralysis, tinnitus, and emotional distress, according to the suit. Attorney for the appellant, Christina Monta, described the force used by officers during oral arguments last October.
He alleged that the very purpose of these techniques was to cause excruciating pain and that the pain rose to the level of torture. He alleged in the incorporated video that at one point one of the officers was pushing so hard into his nasal cavity that he began to lose oxygen.
The lower court threw out the suit, saying that Aukus and Parks enjoyed qualified immunity as law enforcement officers and that Locke failed to state a case for county liability. But a majority of the appeals panel agreed that law enforcement's actions were excessive given the circumstances and disqualified them from immunity. One judge dissented, opining that the officers did not violate a clearly established right. and that Minnesota law protects public officials from personal liability unless they are, quote, guilty of a willful or malicious wrong. The dismissal was reversed and remanded back to the lower courts for further deliberation. Chelsea Perkins, KAXE News.
That's it for the Up North Report. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Megan Buffington, telling the stories of northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report is sponsored by Woodland Bank, with locations in Grand Rapids, Cohasset, Hill City, and Deer River, dedicated to serving the financial needs of the community and their customers. More info at woodland.bank.
It's 8:40. This is the Thursday morning show on People Powered KAXE. I'm Heidi Holton with Malachi Coons.
That was the Up North Report. And in just a moment, we are continuing our check-in with news around the region. We'll be chatting with Aaron Brown about U.S. Steel, Donald Trump, and mining on the Iron Range. Support for KAXE comes from Minnesota Power, an elite company. Go in here. Envisioning a carbon-free future through their energy-forward strategy. More at mnpower.com/energyforward.
Coming up at 9 o'clock, it is DJ Dang for Headwaters. 1 o'clock, we welcome back Jeff Edmonds. He's our host for On the River. And then tonight at 7 o'clock, DJ Ben Franklinstein.
Oh, what a lineup. Yeah, it's been a little while since I think we heard from Jeff Edmonds. So looking forward to hearing that one and Ben Franklinstein as well. What a DJ name.
No kidding. I wonder if Aaron Brown has a DJ name. I bet he does, somewhere up his sleeve.
I bet he does.
Do you, Aaron Brown? He's joining us now via Zoom.
Well, hello. Yes. I do not have my DJ name when I was a DJ.
Yes.
Keep in mind, that was the start of my media career. was, in fact, Aaron Brown. It was not...
Straight to the point.
You know, I just didn't, you know, there was like Jazzy Jackson or something I could have done, but no, I stuck with the old government name.
Well, you are our final conversation today. We've been talking about rural issues. We just heard from Brian Arla. You may have knew him. I did not know. He's from Chisholm, and it was at the Hibbing Tribune, talking really interesting story he did on grocery stores in small towns and what it means. You're now at the Star Tribune, Aaron, and you had a recent column. The title of it was "Trump Bossing Around U.S. Steel Could Cost Jobs Down the Line." Let's talk about this.
Well, we always have to have a provocative headline on our columns, and that was mine. And really, it's a story we've been following for a while. U.S. Steel is. I mean, most people know, but it's one of the two big mining companies on the Iron Range, and it's certainly the oldest. It is 1901. It really built the modern Iron Range. Where the towns are and what they're like is heavily influenced by U.S. Steel in history. And today, it's a much smaller company than it was. It has a smaller market share. It is still one of the big American steelmakers, but not the biggest. And so it's changed. And as part of that change, evidence of that change, this year it was purchased by Nippon Steel of Japan. Of course, with a name like U.S. Steel and the history that that company has. That was not without controversy. People were concerned that a foreign owner of U.S. Steel could affect things like national security. If a foreign power had influence over our steel production in a time of war, and I think it really, even as much as that, is the pride. You know, the pride of having this company bought out. And of course, U.S. Steel owns the Minntac mine in Mountain Iron and the Keewatin Taconite in, obviously, Keewatin, and they're a part owner of Hibbing Taconite, though not they don't operate it or own the majority anymore. But U.S. Steel made the merger. It was controversial. Former President Biden didn't want to make the deal. The United Steelworkers of America didn't want the deal. They preferred a different owner. And President Trump initially opposed it as well, and did even as he was sworn in. But sometime in the last winter, into the spring, a deal was struck in which the president would endorse the merger and allow it in exchange for something called a golden share, among other promises and things involved in the deal. The golden share would allow the U.S. government, essentially Trump, to dictate terms on any matter involving the business of U.S. Steel. So if the government doesn't like what U.S. Steel is doing, they can just jump in and tell them not to do that thing, which is an enormous amount of power. In other countries, you might, you know, in other times, you'd call it nationalization, where the government takes control of a private industry. It is certainly has shades of nationalizing the company, because it's not all the way, because it's still owned by the shareholders of U.S. Steel, now Nippon Steel. But it is an enormous and really, frankly, unprecedented amount of control over the business that the president has. And at first, it was really designed to keep the company from laying off anybody in the short term, which is always the fear when you have a merger, that, okay, we looked at the books and we don't need half you guys, you can go. And that's always the worry. And of course, unemployment, mining unemployment is a huge deal on the Mesabi Iron Range. It's not the biggest employer in terms of industries, but it is the biggest GDP producer in terms of our economy, and it influences a lot of other industries and really the population as a whole. So people are very concerned about what that might mean. Well, we have our first example of what it might mean. A few weeks ago, U.S. Steel announced plans to move its steel making operations, a certain kind of steel it was making at the Granite City Works in Granite City, Illinois, along the river there, across from Missouri. And that mill was going to stop producing steel, which we would normally call an idling. But because of the deal with Trump, and perhaps to stay on the good side of the U.S. government, the company said, we're not laying anybody off. We're going to put everybody on a maintenance schedule. So they're going to presumably do something to the plant, what they would sometimes call a hot idle here on the Iron Range. But it was indefinite. We didn't know how long it was going to go on. And I pointed this out in a casual reference in one of my columns, and it was clearly something that made the company very sensitive, how I described it. And sure enough, less than a week later, the Commerce Secretary was on the phone with David Burritt, the CEO of U.S. Steel, telling him, no, you can't do that. You have to actually make steel at Granite City. And so they're going to keep that plant running. And of course, on the surface, this sounds like, well, great, great for American jobs, great for keeping people working. But in a nominally capitalist market-based economy, what that will mean is U.S. Steel is making more steel than it thinks it can sell right now. And that's oversupply, which tends to drive down prices and eventually create stockpiles that any Iron Ranger knows that when the taconite pellets are make a big mountain down in West Duluth, when you drive down to Duluth and you see a mountain of taconite pellets, you can predict layoffs coming. And that's the kind of thing, when you oversupply, you can predict. And so while this is in the short run, you know, keeping Granite City open, certainly if I was a Granite City worker, I'd be pretty happy about that, I suppose. But in terms of the steel industry, the argument I made in the column was that, you know, if we're going to use the government's power, unprecedented, and frankly, I made the argument, you know, when you compare words like socialism and fascism and government systems that we're all kind of afraid of, that we don't want, or claim that we don't want, one of the key, like, textbook definitions is how industry is handled. And when industry is kind of wrapped into the government as, like, a function of the government, if it's owned by the state, that's socialism. But if it's managed by the state as part of a regime, that's fascism. And so we're, you know, we're dangerously close to some of this, is my argument. And then I also make the argument that if you're going to do that, or if you're going to brush up against this thing, the way you are and take this unprecedented amount of control, what we really need, what we, the Iron Range, really needs, and what the steel industry needs in the United States is modernization. What we, if we're going to invest, let's invest in a industrial policy. Let's get the new owners in Nippon Steel, who have committed billions to reinvest in the company as part of the deal. Get them to modernize our mines here. Our the mills in Indiana, the Gary Works, badly needs upgrades. Granite City, if you're going to keep it, you need to upgrade it. Pennsylvania, the Mon Valley, all places where the steel industry needs to modernize its works or face a market-based threat, not a government threat, but Nucor is the largest American steel company. They run electric arc furnaces exclusively, and that's where most of the steel industry is going. And U.S. Steel has one electric arc furnace down in Arkansas, or one facility that uses electric arc furnaces, and that's that's a major deficit in terms of market competition. So that's my backgrounder, Heidi. I haven't overstayed my welcome already.
No,
not at all. That is a very in-depth look at the issue, and yeah.
Yeah, I want you to kind of flesh out for us when you use the word unprecedented, because you are also steeped in the history of the Iron Range. Kind of play that out for us.
Unprecedented. So the government has always had a relationship with U.S. Steel because it needed the Supreme Court's approval to exist way back in the early 20th century. The Supreme Court could have broken it up on monopoly grounds, but didn't, because U.S. Steel was formed, this is the historical factoid, U.S. Steel was formed to be trust-proof. It was the response to the threats and concerns about things like Standard Oil and companies that were monopolistic. Corporations were formed, like U.S. Steel were formed, to really get around the idea that the monopolies were controlling all the prices and all the competition. U.S. Steel did it by forming a legal corporation that was just so big that no one else could get around it. And that was kind of a loophole in how big corporations became part of America. I'm writing about that in a book. And so U.S. Steel has always had this relationship with the government that was kind of like, well, this is a big employer. This is a big economic driver. And so the presidents and Congresses and such over the years tended to regard U.S. Steel with some reverence. And of course, some politicians would rail against it. But for the most part, it was like a Google or an Apple, these huge corporations today where the donations that they give and the political support that they give under the table is kind of a big deal. And so, but now you see U.S. Steel requires the administration to function under this unprecedented arrangement. And that may seem like no big deal down here on the ground, but it changes the power dynamics within our system. It makes, essentially, it centralizes power to a dramatic degree in the private industry. And it also means that, if the government has a stake in a company like U.S. Steel, and if other steel companies want to do business that involves government approvals, if there's other mergers, if there's other, just frankly, business dealings, you have to wonder who's getting the fairest shake from the government, and so it essentially it opens up. We haven't been confronted all of these yet, but it opens up a tremendous amount of questions, and it just invites the potential of instability. If things makes it so that if things go bad, they're going to go very bad, very, very bad, and the market is going to be all disrupted and broken up. And the natural, as Ned Beatty's character in Network would say, the natural order is going to be thrown off, and he'd give a big speech, because it's the invisible hand of the market is now essentially being held down by the very visible hand of the government. And so that's an unusual circumstance. Historically, there might be examples in small cases where temporarily, during wartime, governments took some some what you may call overreach, but this is something quite different and is really only a product of a president like our President Trump, who has this new idea about what American systems should look like and is trying to reshape them.
You have talked in the article and today about the long term, what in your mind would be the right thing for mining on the Iron Range is the modernization, is the upgrades. There was a lot of talk about all the investment that Nippon Steel was going to make. Has any of that come to light yet? Are places that U.S. Steel owns around the United States seeing any sort of investment, or has that all sort of, is it too early to tell, and has that remained on the theory level?
Internal company conversations may be happening that I'm not aware of, but we haven't seen or received public notice of those investments, though it is predicted that they will come. The terms of the deal have kind of a strange waiting period where basically U.S. Steel, Nippon is not allowed to do much in the next up until 2027. And then they're supposed to invest heavily in some things at that point. There might be some money that's released sooner than that. But I think a lot of people would love to know what their plans really are. And here's why. And this is, you know, there's a lot. I've encountered some of the most difficult conversations with people in the mining industry in the last several months. I think in part because the industry is under tremendous stress right now. The local mines are under tremendous stress right now. They're open except for Minorca, which is closed, which is a stressor. And HIBTAC went down by half. Cleveland Cliffs did that move back in May. But so there's 630 miners laid off right now. And the other mines, Keetac, what's left of HIBTAC, MINTAC, UTAC, and North Shore, are nervous as heck about the demand and the price of iron ore because the price of iron ore is kind of parked in the vicinity of $105 a ton right now. And that is in the vicinity of what it costs to make a ton of iron ore in Minnesota. Again, different mines have different costs of production. There's different factors. And the fact that these companies use the iron in their own steel sometimes complicates the financial picture. But if the price goes down, and many are predicting that it will for economic reasons, then these mines are in a world of hurt. This is happening alongside the fact that the grade of the iron that's being pulled out of the ground here in Minnesota is gradually declining. It's getting more challenging to get the same quality of ore, which is a natural function of any mine. Over time, you mine the best stuff first, and then you keep working it until it's no longer financially viable. We're told we have 100 years of iron ore in the ground, and technically we do. We have maybe more than that if you can get in there and get it. And the cost is the major factor in all mining projects. Cost is, you know, we argue about a lot of things, but cost is what determines the health of a mine. And so that's, mining companies are coming up against big questions about how many mines they're really going to need in northern Minnesota. The new forms of steelmaking use less taconite, more other kinds of scrap steel and pure iron. And coupled with that, you have an enormous mine in Guinea, West Africa, that is owned by China, that's going to produce the richest iron ore in the world, just like we did 100 years ago when U.S. Steel was founded. So it's a really challenging time for the industry. And so the president's involvement creates a variable that is hard to predict.
You can read Aaron Brown's full article at startribune.com or through his website, minnesotabrown.com. Thanks for your time today, Aaron.
Yeah, sorry I talked so much. I felt like I talked too much. No. You all okay out there?
Yeah.
Take a breather.
Yeah, you're okay. Thank you.
Okay, good.
Bye-bye. We've been talking about lots of local stories, and you'll be able to get these interviews. We'll be posting them on our website as well. And we thank you for joining us this morning. Coming up, it's going to be Headwaters with DJ Dang.
Thank you for tuning in. It is checking in on our weather. It's going to be a sunny day here. We've got highs in the low 70s once again. Beautiful weather this week. And currently hanging out in the low to mid 60s right now across the area. We've got sunny skies. Actually, a little cooler. Upper 50, 57 in Bemidji. And in Aiken, up to 60, fair skies as well. We receive support from... I need some help, Heidi. My
Paul Bunyan?
My cursor is going wild.
Okay.
My computer's going rogue.
Oh, okay.
I just turned 30, so things like that can happen to me. But I need you to kick it off.
Okay. We'd like to thank Grand Itasca Clinic and Hospital for their support. They're home to an experienced OBGYN team providing comprehensive women's health services, including maternity and advanced gynecology care, all in Grand Rapids. Learn